This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today, I am excited to welcome Pam Raymond and Jamie Gately, co-founders of Blueprint, a platform built to support design professionals with the tools and strategies they need to grow. With decades of experience leading marketing and communications for some of the most recognized firms in the world, they now focus on helping smaller firms like ours compete at a higher level. Today, we're talking about how small firm architects can position themselves to win even when they might be up against a bigger firm. Pam Raymond and Jamie Gately, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you here. Yeah, excellent. Great. We're going to start off like we always do. I want to share your origin stories. We're going to talk about marketing and positioning and messaging and storytelling and all of those good things, but I want to understand how you got started. So Pam, when did you discover your passion for what you do, and who or what inspired you to get started?
I think I had a lot of different mentors that really inspired me, but I grew up on the East Coast. I'm now on the West Coast in San Francisco, but I grew up on the East Coast. I went to school there. I lived and worked in New York for a number of years in communications and marketing and fashion and retail and New York Times and all kinds of great things.
So you were in the city when you were East Coast?
In the city, yeah. And then I decided, as one does when you're 21 or 22, that I wanted to just pick up and move to Chicago, where I had been exactly one time. And I decided I wanted to go to architecture school. My father went to architecture school, and some other people that I knew were in the business, and it was really intriguing to me. So I did. I used my communications background. I went and worked in a pretty prominent AOR firm in Chicago to learn the business. I had never done a single RFP before. And I worked and worked away at that. And then a couple years in, the director of marketing position opened up at SOM in Chicago, which was like the big time. That was like going up to the big leagues. So I interviewed for it. And famously, I think Jamie knows, I had to go interview there 9 times with the partnership and present myself. And I got the gig. So that was going up to the big leagues. And so we had, I think at the time, 11 or 12 people in the department, 350 people in the office. We were opening up markets in China and Korea and all these great, incredible geographies and the Middle East and so forth. So very big, heady times, and continued to learn so much. And then short version of the story is the SOM office in San Francisco asked me to come out, rebuild their team, which can happen when you hire the wrong person who hires the wrong person who, right, you just devolve. So we built that back up too. And people had told me for a number of years that I should strike out on my own. And frankly, I was too chicken to do it. But then I bit the bullet and I did it and started my own consulting practice. And while Jamie and I both come from extra large firms, experience there, we want to share with small and medium-sized firms some of the basics and best practices because they are very, very applicable. And we know from the inside of being at the large and extra large firms that it shouldn't be as daunting as you think it is. We have all the inside scoop about what goes on there. So struck out on my own, got very grateful to have gotten really, really busy doing that. And then called up my old colleague, Jamie Gately, and asked her if she'd come and share a couple clients, and the rest was history. And then I'll let Jamie explain what Blueprint is, or later we will, but we combined forces and she's on the East Coast, I'm on the West, and it's been a wonderful experience for the past couple of years.
All right. Well, it sounds like a perfect match. Dynamic duo, East Coast, West Coast, got the whole country figured out. Excellent.
Got it covered.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jamie, what about you? What's your origin story?
Well, I wish I had the story where I like always knew I wanted to do this. And then I mapped my course and put one foot in front of the other. And I really fell into it more than that. I went to school for marketing and communications, honestly, truly because I am not a finance and accounting person and I knew that wasn't my thing. And so I was attracted to the storytelling and the branding aspect of it, but really did not know where this would take me. My roommate in college, her dad was a partner at a firm, at a mid-sized firm in Texas, where I was at the time. So he gave me a summer job as a receptionist at that firm. This was way back when people still dialed by phone to offices, which no longer really happens anymore. So I worked as a receptionist there during the summer in college. And while I was there, it was a marketing team of, I think, two for a 50-person firm. The marketing person left. And so they were like, can you just help, you know, put some of these things together? And so I just had a bit of a knack for it. And so I started, while I was between phone calls, I started putting together proposals. And so I, again, just learned the ropes there, went back, finished my degree, and then they hired me after I finished. And so I went back and worked. And then truly a couple of months in, that firm teamed with SOM Chicago for a University of Texas bid. And so that's how I met the team in Chicago. And as fate would have it, I ended up moving to Chicago, and so very shortly after that, for personal reasons. And so I knew no one else there. I had no other leads. I had one lead for a job in Chicago, and that was through that team at SOM. I was 22 at the time. I mean, 23 maybe. I had just turned 23. I was very young and green and was probably way out over my skis, but I didn't have to do 9 interviews like Pam because she had to pick up. But I felt like I was faking it till I made it in those interviews, trying to really get that job. And I'm so delighted I did. And it was just trial by fire. Like, I remember just feeling like I had dove into the deepest part of the pool with no swimmies, and I had to figure out how to swim. And so it really, honestly, was, it taught me so much. It was very intense environment, but I really didn't know different. Like, I had such limited work experience prior to that I didn't realize how crazy it was. And I had a great team. As Pam said, we had a good, healthy sized team there at that time. By then, Pam had moved to the San Francisco office. And so I worked there. And this was in like pre-recession days. And then the recession hit in 2008. And that was a learning experience. And I just was like the Lone Ranger that stuck it out. And so at the end, post-recession, I was like the last one standing. And so the manager had left there and they promoted me to run that team in Chicago. And so again, I was given many opportunities that maybe on paper I wasn't qualified for, but I proved my way along the way and figured it out along the way. And so not so different than the topic we're talking about today, which is David versus Goliath. You might not always feel like you have every skill set under the sun or on paper, every qualification that you need, but there are workarounds and there are ways to use the skills that you have to really progress. And so that's how I've done that in my own career. And so fast forward years, I was at SOM for nearly 10 years, had a child, and the work environment was insane. As I said, it never stopped being that way. And during my time there, I had hired and trained so many talented people who had then decided to go on to other things, maybe for work-life balance reasons or other. And so I decided that I was going to start my own consultancy and bring back, frankly, most of them were women who were hired at the time and now were new mothers. And we're at a time in our life where we couldn't be in that sort of environment in a full-time way, or we didn't want to. And so I put the moms back to work and was a graphic designer and a writer and myself. And so we basically freelance teamed for smaller firms and gave smaller firms access to really, really trained professionals in this field. And so it was a no-brainer in the sense that firms were getting like top trained, you know, they know that we all knew the business, we could step right in and do it. And I had all of those sort of bases covered. And so we did that for, gosh, it's now that's been 10 years. And so along the way we moved, and as Pam said, we reconnected a couple of years ago, and now we share clients in a consulting capacity, but we also have Blueprint, which is in a nutshell, the idea that we through the years know that we have so many tools and access to so many tools that we have either come up with or worked with larger firms to create. And some of these smaller firms, most of these smaller firms don't have that. And they certainly don't have capacity to hire in-house marketing folks. And so we really wanted to find a way to offer those tools to small firms. And so Blueprint puts templates, tools, and guides together where small firms can purchase those guides and download them and then use them in a DIY way or with a marketing team of one, if that's what you have, but in a much, much smaller capacity. But it's the cliff notes of all of the important things that lead to successful marketing and business development and comms. And so we're really, instead of just starting with a blank piece of paper, we're giving you the beginnings of all of that strategy so that you can take it and use it and make it your own, but you're not starting from scratch. And so we've found that it's really helped small firms who again are overwhelmed with the thought of all of the billable work and client facing work they have and this entire part of their business, which is obviously not insignificant. And so all of those tools and templates are intended to help and very specific to the AEC world. So that is Blueprint in a nutshell.
And that's gotblueprint.com is the website if anybody wants to go check it out while we're talking here. So Blueprint is primarily focused on small firms and medium-sized firms. Do I have it correct that it's primarily tools and guides on that website, blueprint.com? Mm-hmm. And then the consulting that you do, and when you pair up to do consulting, is that also for small firms and medium-sized firms?
Yes. So it is primarily tools and guides, all downloadable. We used a Google platform to create all the files. And some of them are how-tos as well. So it's anything from how to create a simple marketing plan to how to do a photo shoot, which, you know, we just tried to focus on the pain points of really any size firm, but predominantly small and medium. I mean, when we had the luxury, you know, creating photo shoots for projects halfway across the world, it wasn't necessarily that it was budgetless when we were doing it, but we know how incredibly expensive so many aspects of running this part of your business can be. So we want to make everything as efficient as possible. And so you can really lose your shirt on something like a photo shoot, right? So we give you these guidelines of like, here's what you really need to do it. And here's how to negotiate with the photographer. And here's what you want to come away with. We're looking, anything that we offer on the site, we really want there to be a return, because this can be a very overwhelming component of your practice. But if you don't have this component up and running and humming along, not to be like a fear monger, but there could be no practice after a while unless you really intentionally focus on this sort of thing. So we try to make it as easy as possible. We try to make it as bite-sized as possible. And we're always here to answer any questions. So you can DIY it yourself for sure, or you can come to us and have a session with us and we'll show you how to do it. Or you can hire us and we'll do it with and for you. So there's all kinds of flexibility built in.
So at any level, they can start off by going to gotblueprint.com, look at the guides and tools there. And then if they want more, they can reach out to you and there's different levels of working with you.
Yeah.
Great. I want to focus primarily on competing against larger firms, because that's your background. you know the inside of how large firms work. And often we find ourselves as small firms going up against those big firms.
Yeah.
You call it David versus Goliath. That's exactly what it's like. As you described in your intros, you have big teams, right? Teams of dozens of people who are there to just do marketing and branding and messaging and proposals and all of the things to get noticed. And small firms have none, except for typically the owner or somebody within the firm, but typically it's one person who's doing that. And so what would you say to small firms in terms of getting noticed? What are some of the things that at the really high level they should be focused on?
One thing I'd like to say is that the Goliaths are not always what you think they are. And that's really the moral of that story, is that you think size is everything, and really it's not. It's about a creative way of thinking and doing things differently. And so we like to apply that to small firms too. You think that resources and having a team of 10 is everything, but they don't have it all figured out. And often they're recreating and spinning in themselves. And so if you can find a way to more efficiently and clearly and articulately tell your story, you can cut right through a lot of spin that a large firm is spending their time on and cut to the chase of what your potential client's really looking for. And the other side of that, and I'm sure Pam will have something to add to this too, but is that we often say clients hire people, not firms. And so it's really about that relationship building. It's not about just the reputation of a big, huge firm. It's about the people. And so whether you're a big firm or whether you're a firm of four people, the relationships that you're forging with your potential clients weigh far more than an invisible, you know, reputation of a big firm. So I think you really have to focus on building those relationships. That really matters a lot when it gets down to who potential clients pick.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. Before he passed away, I had spoken several times on the show with Gene Cohn of KPF, mm-hmm. a master of relationships, right? And that's what he said. That was his primary role at KPF, was to build relationships. And that's something that, you know, whether you're a large firm or you're a small firm, you have the capacity to do that. Are there any other advantages that small firms have over large firms because of their size and scale?
Oh, definitely. I think to carry that theme a little farther, and some direction that we often give to our clients, is that no matter what you're doing in this realm, you need to put yourself in the seat of the client always. And no disservice to architects, because they work so hard and so long on projects. They often want to share every possible angle and detail of every single thing that contributed to their deliverables. But put yourself in the seat of that client and understand that they're getting 25 of these proposals, sometimes more. And you need engaging, succinct, really interesting stories. And as Jamie said, that client is going to hire people, not the firm necessarily. The other thing too, to be fair, is like, look, there's a lot of large firms that are very good at this. So it's not that inside the large firm, it's chaos every time, but they are distracted and they are under incredible pressure for bottom line issues and other things. And they're working on 10 projects halfway around the world. So you definitely have an advantage. And I think to take a moment and breathe a little bit and properly kick things off instead of just going headfirst into the way that you've always done it is really important. So setting aside just a little bit of time and having a bit of a strategy session and figuring out what are your advantages or what strengths do you want to play to will go a really long way. And the way that that can be most effective is, carrying on from Jamie's earlier point, you need to get to know that client. So just winging something over the transom and like hoping it works, and that's asking an awful lot of a PDF, right? To do all this work for you. And it's easier and you're in the comfort of your own office and you're creating things and you're redesigning things and you're changing fonts and colors. None of that matters. Had you done the work and met that client at least once, at least one time, preferably more, you would know what their pain points are. You would have the advantage that your competitors don't. In the large practices, they don't always have the time to go see the client or the decision makers or someone on the selection committee. They try, but they're pulled in so many different directions. If you have the opportunity to build that relationship in advance, you're way out ahead, because your response to the RFQ or RFP or whatever it ends up being is so informed. And it's just going to resonate so much more than the big tone from the large firm, like, here's everything that we've done for the last 60 years. So it really is very much about those relationships.
That's a great tip to connect personally, one-on-one, human to human, with the decision makers, the stakeholders. But how do you do that, right? If I'm sitting in my office and I want to present a proposal for this great project that I know larger firms are going after as well, how do I make that connection? How do I get introduced to the right people?
Well, we really believe it's about doing that well before an RFP hits the street. So it's more about making those relationships with potential clients that you think could have a project down the line. And it's the long game. It's not the short game of waiting to see something posted on some listserv somewhere. And then, like Pam said, pushing together a PDF and shoving it over and hoping that that does the trick. It's about forging those relationships along the way. And sometimes it takes years, plural. Sometimes it takes a year. Sometimes it takes months. So it's not always a quick burn on that, but that's what makes the big difference, is keeping those relationships warm. And then you know about the project before it hits. And then you can get your teaming strategy together before everyone else does. So the strategy is really about making those relationships with the clients before the project hits. And we know it's not possible every time. Sometimes something's going to come out and no one knew about it, or very few people knew about it, and everyone is in the same boat. And that always, you know, we understand that that happens. But when you can, meet with those clients, potential clients, before the actual project is an RFQ. And the other thing is that, you know, people are often very reticent to ask a potential client to meet, whether it's someone on, you know, that works with the city or someone in a government agency, because they think it's like not allowed. And oftentimes that's not the case. And so assume that you are going to be allowed to meet. If they can't meet with you, they won't. But your competitors are meeting with those potential clients in whatever those organizations are, for the most part. And so go ahead and do that and meet with them, because like Pam said, you're going to gain so much more information from a meeting like that than you are reading the RFQ and trying to decipher what they need and what's important to them. And so we really encourage, and what we do with our clients is we make a target list of who do you want to work with? Not what RFQs are out on the street right now that you're responding to. I don't care about those because it's too late. Who do you want to work with? What organizations do you want to work for? And let's start targeting relationship building initiatives with those people, because when the right project comes, you're going to be way out ahead.
Yeah. We often talk about small firms establishing their ideal clients and a focused market, right? So they know exactly who they're talking to. And often small firms resist that, right? They want to be generalists. They want to be able to do all the projects for all the people.
Yeah.
And I constantly remind them that if they are focused on an ideal client and a focused market, everything else is easier. And this is another example of that, right? That if you know your ideal client and you know that focused market and you know the players in that market, then it's much easier to find out, you know, that that person at that company is the person that I need to talk to. That if you have lots of different ideal clients and lots of different markets that you work in, now who do you talk to, right? When that project comes in, you know, you only have so many hours in the day to be able to have those meetings, to have those connections. And so a focused market is important.
We're not opposed to generalists, and I think we came from that environment, but think about it. That, again, putting yourself in the seat of the client, that client wants to hire an expert. So you need to be perceived as an expert. That client wants to hire and wants to say that they've hired an award-winning firm. You need to win awards. That means you need to submit for awards. So a lot of what we do through Blueprint is, certainly there's a marketing plan that you can download and create for yourself. And all of this is setting goals and working backwards from there. It really is. It's not overcomplicated. It's just a very rigorous and methodical march to this state where you want to be. So like anything else in the world, you have to set your goals and work backwards from there. And you have to be methodical about it. So yeah, I think that's the name of the game, is putting yourself in the shoes of that client.
Can we talk a little bit more about that, about the marketing plan and being strategic? Because I think often small firms reinvent the wheel every time they put a proposal together and waste a lot of time. So can you talk a little bit about strategies and plans and how it might help them with the efficiencies?
First of all, don't be shy. That's the first thing, is that, look, you went to architecture school, you had an idea of what you want to do with your life, you have an ethos, you have all kinds of really wonderful things for why you're in business. So you need to articulate them and you need to be confident about them. I think that clients are, you know, they're sort of like dogs, right? They can sense it when you're not confident. And so, yeah, there's all kinds of things that you can do, even if you perceive them to be a weakness. What we like to help clients do is sort of get some leverage and flop those over into something stronger. So if you go like, oh my gosh, I only have three people in my firm and I'm going to get, even if it's a medium-sized firm and they have a portfolio that's like, right? There's things that you can do to tell your story that are really positive. So you are nimble, right? You only get an A team when you deal with this group over here. That's another great juxtaposition to small practices versus large. We all know that, I'm not telling tales out of school here, but we all know that there's a bit of a bait and switch. There's someone who's the face of this thing to land the client. And then often, not always, but often the client never sees that person again, or very rarely. So you are an A team. There is no bait and switch. You are on this project from the kickoff meeting until the doors open on this thing. And I think you just need to think in terms like that. If you start to understand that client and you do understand their pain points, and there's a million variables to what those are, we don't know. But every client right now, especially, is risk averse, right? Every client wants to understand or see that you're coming in under budget and quicker schedules and so forth. So we believe that it's critically important to measure your performance on your existing work, right? If you can come in an RFQ or in a casual meeting with a client and let them know that you have 100% success rate in permitting in your town, that's something that client really does need to hear. That's like one less thing they have to worry about. And maybe someone coming from out of town wouldn't have that same ability to say the same thing. So think about your work, and we often help clients do it because we have the fresh perspective. And a lot of times when you're just understandably so buried, you don't. We help clients figure out what these strengths are and boast about them in a way that is really engaging. So if you cut the schedule by 6 months, if you save the client $1 million, all of these things are music to clients' ears. And don't be shy about them in the proposal either. Like, call that out to marry over to their selection criteria, right? So if you need help figuring those out, we're always really glad to help with that. But you absolutely have strengths. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in business. You probably have a wonderful repeat client percentage, right? That's a positive thing that other clients want to hear. This client likes you and keeps hiring you, right? So that's a really positive thing too. There's all kinds of things that you can tell them that would really resonate.
And just doubling on that, that's something that Pam talks about a lot with clients too, is that when we look at the marketing plan and we're looking at who we're trying to target and we're trying to understand where to go, it's not starting with a blank piece of paper. It's, who do you already know? Who have you already worked for that went really well? Who do you know that knows someone that you should know? So it's all about making the warm connection and not just, okay, we're going to cold call and try to introduce ourselves to people who've never heard of you before. It's not that at all. And so the marketing plan, if you go on the site and preview it, it is quite tactical. It's not a pie in the sky one. It's not a big strategy that doesn't actually get to how. It really is a how plan. Like, here's how we're going to do it step by step. And it's all about warm connections and relationships. And, you know, the thing that we talk to clients a lot about is that, yes, you need to be qualified. Yes, you need to prove your experience, as Pam just said. And you have to prove it with metrics that clients can see and understand and believe. You also just have to be a person that the client is going to want to spend the next X months or years with, because that's how long these projects take to actually complete. So when you think about relationship building, it's friendship making. It's not just it is about proving your expertise. But once you've done that, it's also about, you know, being a reasonable and interesting person who the client wants to hang out with for the next X years, because that's what this project's going to take. And so remember the human aspect of it. We really like to encourage that, because yes, it's all about your experience and your work, but it's also about making those human connections that really matter.
Yeah. Reminds me again of Gene Cohn and also Patrick McLamey, the former CEO of HOK.
Oh, yeah.
Often said the same thing. I did an entire podcast series with Patrick called Build Smart that tells the whole story of HOK, the history of HOK, and his rise as draftsman through CEO, and constantly talking about relationship building and told stories about how he did that and how he messed up some of those stories. And, you know, so two iconic figures in large firms. That was their primary message when I talked to them. Build those relationships, make friends, make sure that people know who you are.
Yeah, it is definitely the long game, as Jamie said. And also, we're definitely here to tell you, not to be intimidated by this. They are just people, right? They are neighbors and uncles and fathers and cousins and so forth. So there's really nothing to be intimidated by. Yes, there's some difficult personalities everywhere, but we have found when we encourage clients to go and see their aspirational potential clients of their own, they're just people.
Yeah.
And if you need help figuring out what the goal, every meeting should have goals and objectives, right? Don't just go. And also don't think that you have to go with a stacked iPad and here's every project we've ever done. And let me tell you our origin story for the next hour. You have one goal of being in that meeting, and that is to come away with intel, not in a icky kind of way, like you're there building a relationship, but your goal of that meeting is to come away with intel that's going to benefit you. And they know that too. And so working some questions into the conversation about what's coming down the pike, or what are the reasons that you like to hire certain firms, or what are you looking for when you hire them, or what's happening on this project that we happen to know that you're doing here in town? What are the challenges with that project? So anyone who can be perceived as a problem solver gets a huge head start, huge head start. And that's what architects are. That's how they're trained. They're trained to be problem solvers. So use that skill, right? Ask the right questions. Don't feel like you need to go into these initial meetings or relationship building meetings and cultivation with every answer to everything that you think they're going to ask you. You're there to ask a couple questions and to listen. And it's much more effective to then go back to your office and maybe then create a package of one or two projects where you've solved something that they told you about, right? How much more effective is that than talking at a client for an hour about everything under the sun? They want to see that you could solve problems. That's it.
Yeah. They're just people.
They're just people.
That's a very good tip. It's something that my grandfather taught me, and my mom reminds me of all the time when, you know, I tell her, I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to talk to this person. I'm super nervous about it. It's just like, they're just people. And likely they're nervous and scared too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all you're just doing is having a conversation and building relationships with other people.
And keep in mind too, because they're just people, they have bosses too, right? They have the board of trustees that they have to respond to. They have donors that they have to keep happy. They have all kinds of pressures on them too. So they're dealing with the same thing. And if you can be perceived as their problem solver, you're going to make them look good, right? It's sort of as simple as that. So architects have so many things that they can offer in terms of problem solving. The really important lesson is just to breathe a little bit, right? And don't feel like you have to lay on them everything that you've ever thought of. Just breathe a little bit and you're going to be sort of their confidant and you're going to be their problem solver. It's great.
Yeah. You want to become their ally.
Their ally. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they need help or they need an answer, they know someone they can go to.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by WeCollabify, one of our trusted allied partners. As this community has grown over the years, one thing has become very clear to me. The partners we choose matter. Allied partners are not sponsors. They're not advertisers. They are organizations that we've taken the time to get to know, to work alongside, and to trust. They understand the real pressures of practice and the responsibility that comes with leading a small firm. WeCollabify earned that trust by helping small firm owners address a challenge that sits at the center of long-term firm health, building capacity in a way that supports people, not just projects. Their insourcing model brings skilled design, BIM, and technical professionals directly into your team. They work in your time zone, inside your systems, and part of your day-to-day workflow. That integration allows firms to add capacity when it's needed, scale with intention, and grow without sacrificing culture, leadership focus, or quality of life. If you're thinking beyond short-term fixes and focused on building a firm that lasts, I encourage you, go learn why WeCollabify is one of our trusted allied partners. Visit WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect to learn more. That's WeCollabify.com /entrearchitect. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, RCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at rcat.com under the Resources tab. Or just go to rcat.com/arcademy. That's ARCAT.com/ARCATEMY. That's rcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. I want to shift gears a little bit. You know, many of the listeners to this show are architects who are working for other firms who want to start a new firm, right? They want to start a new small firm. And a question that I get very often is, how do I do that without a portfolio? I can't use the portfolio from the company that I'm working with now, and I want to start my own firm. How do I do that? How do I get the message out? How do I tell the story about who I am and my firm without having, you know, pretty pictures to share?
Well, we know there's some limitations about exactly what you can share, but you do have a portfolio of work that you have worked on and contributed to. So you might not be able to blast that out on social media or on your website if there's, you know, legality to that. But you have stories about problems that you've solved on projects of various scales and typologies that you can bring with you. No one can stop you from doing that because it's your life experience that you're bringing to the new firm that you're starting. And so, yes, we understand that there's some hoops you might have to jump through on how you tell it, but we certainly think you need to come to the table, and it might not be a public, it might not be your website, it might be a one-on-one meeting, but with the stories related to what you contributed to at the firm where you were. And so you do have those, even though you might not have the traditional portfolio, you do have those. And so bring, like Pam said, the problem-solving aspects of what you did in your last role. You're not starting from scratch. You're bringing that life experience with you, and your new potential clients need to know that. And so I would very much focus on that. And again, not taking components that you didn't work on or that you're trying to like take that you don't know enough about. Take the parts that you really know about, that you had a part in solving those challenges and those problems. And so I think it really is about not being shy about your contributions and making sure that you bring those along with you. And that's what the clients are interested in. They're interested in what you bring to the table. And you might have to have some creative workarounds on how you show up publicly, but I really believe those stories are yours to tell.
Yeah, we all have a story. Every one of us has a story.
I think too that clients are aware that getting a project built is not a singular act by one person. They understand that it was a team. Jamie and I come from an environment that is like, we like to call, it was like the Marines or boot camp or something. Everyone came through SOM and went other places. And the firm was actually quite proud of that, that they were able to contribute to building firms across the industry. So there's nothing wrong with that. People leave jobs every day. And hopefully you have a good relationship with your soon-to-be former employer. And many that we've seen are very generous. And they'll, if you ask them, they'll say, yes, you can take that. They want to be very sure that you're taking what you worked on and not someone else. And so that's all fine. It's important to be morally, ethically correct about all of it. But clients are used to seeing in portfolios previous experience. You don't have to go like bend over backwards and tell them the whole story about where you were and the exact nuances of what you did. But they understand that you had a previous life. And so provided that you credit it appropriately in a small caption somewhere, it's all cool. Like no one thinks twice about that.
Yeah, that's how we all start.
So do the right thing and have the good relationship. You always want to leave a place if you can with a really positive reputation. And we know that sometimes that can be very difficult because the existing firm is wanting to keep you. But hopefully you can get the answer that you need to hear and take what's yours, what you worked on, what you contributed. There's not, clients are very used to seeing that. It happens all the time.
I often think that the story may be more powerful than the portfolio if it's written properly.
Right.
And everybody has a story.
Right.
Having your experience in larger firms and now working with smaller firms, I want to ask you a couple of questions as a comparison between the two. What are some of the mistakes that you see small firms making?
Oh, you know, we talk a lot about small firms missing the mark on where to spend their time, energy, and resources. And so they think, and Pam sort of touched on this in an earlier question, but like reinventing the wheel every time on a proposal where we're going to change the colors, we're going to change the fonts, we're going to make it look different every single time. So they're churning and churning away on this with zero resources in-house to do that, like a large firm would do, with no return on that. Or, you know, they're, and this happens with a lot of our clients, I'm chuckling because it's happening with a client of ours right now, but they'll be so obsessed with internal meetings that they'll spend hours internally meeting with each other instead of actually doing the work of going and making the relationships and getting in front of clients and doing the things that really matter. And so I think it's human nature. You know, we like to do things that we feel comfortable doing. Every architect is a design mind. And so they know how to design a book and that's comfortable to them. Not every architect is a relationship building guru. And so they don't necessarily feel comfortable going and doing that. And so they will spend time doing what they're most comfortable with without a return on that. And so we really encourage, the thing I'll say about that is this work takes all kinds of personality types and skills. You don't have to be the super vibrant, you know, outgoing personality to be really great at business development or relationship building. There's something for everyone. There is something about this for everyone that you can all do. And so we're oftentimes helping clients pinpoint. Not everyone has to be on stage, you know, doing some big presentation or podcast or whatever it may be, but there's always something you can be doing on the business development and communications and marketing front, even if you're not that person. So we really encourage people to think through that and to make sure that they have a balanced team so that someone feels comfortable doing some of those more extroverted activities. But that's often where we see, at least in my opinion, Pam, what do you think about mistakes firms are making?
I think that yes to all of those things for sure. I think that we're sort of getting into the psychology of the mindset of a sort of typical architect. We understand completely that you could be, it's not that they're antisocial, they're just maybe much more comfortable in their own environment and studio. And
lots of introverts, architects are, including myself.
There can be. But we always say too, like anything else, start with the easy stuff. Do something easy that sort of like dips your toe in the water. So much of this is about staying in touch, right? And being in front of the client. I remember being at a large firm at one point, and we tried to go pursue something at a very prestigious university not far from us. And we couldn't get a meeting. And finally, I broke through to the campus architect and I asked why. And they said, we haven't heard from you guys in 15 years. Obviously, they knew that we knew that something big was coming up. And the person said, and knew that it wasn't my fault, but the person said, such and such a firm comes to see us every 6 months. Right? So start with the easy stuff. Send your aspirational clients a little e-blast about a project that you just finished or a groundbreaking or something else. So find ways just to be gently in front of them. And we try and make it very bite-sized and just like a little bit of a healthy stretch. We're not about the cold calls. We're not about like, just like, yeah, go try it. There needs to be a reason. Your day and week and month is jam-packed. And there needs to be a reason for you to siphon off an hour or so here or there. And that's the other thing too, is that none of this is tacking on another 20 or 30 hours to your work week. It's just shifting a little bit. Some of the things that you can diminish, you don't need to be in internal meetings constantly. And if you are, then that's another whole set of operational issues that we can help with. But you don't need certain things and you need more of a few other things. And it makes an exponential difference. Think about too, not always the recipient of all of this is not always an aspirational client. It could be a consultant that you're working with now that is also working with this aspirational client. So maybe you go to lunch together, or maybe they give you the contact info, or maybe they make the intro for you. So there's nothing intimidating about going out to lunch with your structural engineer or your contractor or something. So use that as a way to sort of dip your toe into it as well. Not everything has to be like, oh my gosh, I have a meeting with the director of the museum tomorrow. Wade into it a little bit and start to get comfortable. Start to get a little bit of that intel. Your civil or structural can tell you what this person is like or what they like to talk about or what their latest challenges are. So just be smart about it. like anything else and get the intel that you need to make it a little easier on yourself. And don't, you know, like they say, nothing is as hard as you think it's going to be. So it's not so bad. And we would never set them up to fail. It all needs to be set up to be successful. So there really isn't anything to be intimidated by. Every once in a while, you'll run into a difficult personality. That's life. I mean, you could run into a difficult personality at the grocery store.
Like exactly right.
That's life.
One thing we ask our clients in our workshops, because it can feel like we're giving them all kinds of new ideas to do. Oh, and you should do this and you should try this. And it can feel overwhelming. As one question we ask, and it's something your audience might relate to, is name three things you should stop doing right now. Because really all of the stuff we're talking about today are small habit changes. It's not one big thing that you're going to go do. It's the small incremental changes. It's like working out. It's not one workout. It's like the workout you do every day that really moves the needle over time.
Right. Consistency.
Yeah, the consistency. So if you're going to shift your habits and you're going to do more of these things that we all talked about today, then go ahead and name three things you should stop doing, because that taking those things off your plate is going to open up some time every day, every week, every month to do more of the activities that we've talked about on the podcast today. So I think that's important too. Take some things off your plate. Not everything is moving the needle. Maybe it's an internal meeting you don't need to be attending, or, you know, reinventing the wheel on a proposal that you don't need to be doing. So think of the things you should be taking off your plate so that you can replace those with, you know, a myriad of these things we've talked about.
That's great advice.
We find too, even though we have the fresh perspective and sometimes we can help you with all of that, by and large, you know what you should stop doing. You already know it.
Yes.
So
yes.
You just need to commit to it. Write it down. It goes in the marketing plan. This is what we're going to stop doing, or this is what we're going to replace it with.
Yep. That's great advice. Before we wrap up with our final question, you have dedicated your lives to helping small firms be more successful through marketing and messaging, and have taught architects so much. What have small firms taught you since working with small firms?
Cam, you'll go first.
I'll take it. Well, compared to being in a extra large environment, I think sometimes certainly there's a version of burnout that happens in that chaos and intensity, and you sort of lose sight of why you became an architect in the first place, and you've lost your passion. Not always, but there's definitely that can be the case. And I think when we work with smaller, really agile and enthusiastic firms, it's really inspiring, because there's no one else, like, right? You're not going to turn, there's not a group of eight other partners where you can point the finger or they're responsible for something else. It's all you. You're the one that's going to make it happen. So it's a really exceptional entrepreneurial spirit. And that's really exciting to be around. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I'm sort of cheating because I'm doubling down on what you said. But I think when you're on a huge ship, you get to do little things that turn it in maybe small directions, but you're not really, I mean, rarely are you in a position at a really large firm to be the decision maker that's like turning the ship in a totally opposite direction. Whereas at a small firm, and it's sort of banking on that entrepreneurial spirit, we have workshops where we're like, what kind of work do you want to be doing? This is about defining the kind of work that makes you most excited to get up every day and come to work. And you don't always have the luxury of doing that when you're at a large firm. You know, sometimes you're doing projects that might not be so inspiring to you, but that's, you know, the dice that have been rolled for you. And so the entrepreneurial spirit, but also just the enthusiasm to wake up every day and say, this is the kind of thing I want to go after. And if there is that sort of drive in you, then it's going to make all the work we've talked about today so much easier. You want to do a museum? Okay, let's get in front of people who are going to then put you on the track to be able to do that. And so it can be very motivating in the work that we're talking about, because you're driving your own ship and you're creating your own destiny. And so it's a very different feeling than, I think, contributing, as valuable as that is, to a large firm where you're a drop in a very big bucket. And here you're in the driver's seat. And so that can be a really motivating factor.
Let's wrap things up here with my final question, and I'm going to twist it a little bit. Typically, it's what's one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow, but what is the one thing, what is the first thing they should do to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think you need a plan. I think write it down, right? So you need to write down where this practice is going and how you're going to get there, and back away with incremental, very deliberate, rigorous, methodical, intentional, and you're not a robot in doing it, but write down the ultimate goal or goals and back out of them, and it becomes a roadmap for your success.
Excellent. Jamie?
Yeah, I think you can't improve what you don't measure. And so a lot of times with our clients, we'll walk in and, you know, they just don't know. They don't know. They haven't ever really looked at historically where their work has come from. And from a billings perspective, how much profit has come from those. And so diving into some of those numbers can be very informative to figure out where you should go next. Otherwise, you're making a gut instinct, and I'm not dismissing the value of a gut instinct, but at some point you need some validation to know that you're going in the right direction and can help you really feel like you're making an informed decision. So I think measuring some of the historic performance can help guide your future decisions. And so yes to Pam's writing it down, but also know where you've been so that you know where you're going. And I think that can help a lot of small firms feel more empowered and more secure about the directions they're heading.
Yes to all of that. That's a really incredibly critical part of all of this. If you're, let's pick on museums again. If you want to go design a museum and you've been trying 10 times to get some kind of cultural project going and you're 0 for 10, you need to examine that. You can't go for the 11th and keep hoping that'll just magically happen. So that's definition of insanity, and we want to move away from that. You need to right. have a strategy in place to alter it. Go back and talk to those clients about what they liked or didn't like about what you put forward and what they look for when they hire teams. So measurement is crucial, and understanding the market conditions and so forth is crucial to all of this, and put it all together in a plan for yourself.
Pam Raymond, Jamie Gately, Blueprint is the company. Gotblueprint.com. They've done the work for you. It's there. Gotblueprint.com. They'll give you some templates, some tools. Go check it out at gotblueprint.com. Thank you both for the work that you're doing. Thank you for dedicating yourselves to our community of small firms. I always love to thank people like you who have decided intentionally to work with small firms. We need the help. And so it's great to know that you're there. And thanks for coming by today and sharing your stories and giving us a bunch of tips and tools and techniques, strategies here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
If you enjoyed this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend, because that's how we've continued to grow and serve thousands more small firm architects just like you. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources we discussed today, they are all available in the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a proud member of the Gable Media Network. It's the multimedia network moving the architecture, engineering, and construction industries forward through the power of storytelling. You can earn AIA continuing education credits by listening to select episodes of this podcast and many others at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up. Join us today at Entree Architect Network. It's the worldwide community for entrepreneur architects. We've been around since 2012, and our basic level is now free to join. Yes, you can join Entree Architect Network for free. And that gives you access to valuable business resources and our global community of architects. And you can upgrade anytime for live coaching, AIA approved training, and mastermind support. So visit entrearchitect.com to learn more and to get started. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to the Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, share. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.